I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. This is Note Takers, The Brave New World, or is it? and I think hopefully as we go along, you'll be able to make up your mind about whether it is or is not a new world. Before we do that, though, let's introduce ourselves partially for the sake of the recording and partially so that we all know who's here. I'm Steve Dresser. I'll be running this madness, or at least trying to, and hopefully I'll have some help.
I'm Susan Glass, AABT president, and one of two newsletter editors. Steve is the other.
I'm John Glass, Susan's husband, and also an AABT member.
And John is one of our resident technical experts here who's got... probably knows more than any of us would ever want to admit to about some of these note takers, so I'm going to be relying on you to back me out of corners when I get stuck there, John.
Okay.
Hi, Kate Crohan.
And Kate, I'm going to be relying on you because for useful information, because you've had experience with a couple of these. You've had experience with the Polaris and with the Braille Plus. So
I will try.
And John Buckley.
Suzanne Ament, and I don't know anything about note takers, so I don't have one, so I'll be learning a lot.
And I'm Carla Hayes.
So I think what's becoming clear with note takers is that the old ones are going by the wayside. They worked quite well in their day, but because they're using ancient operating systems, many of which are no longer supported, and because they were developed at an earlier stage, they just aren't as powerful, and because people's needs have increased and their expectations of what they expect these little beasties to do, what used to be great in the days, say, of the Braille and Speak, everybody says, well, yeah, that's nice, but you know, we needed to do a lot more than that now. And the newer machines have attempted to address some of this. Unfortunately, one of the downsides, I think, of all of the newer note takers is that they, because they're kind of using mainstream systems and not relying on their own specially designed interfaces as much, it's kind of incumbent upon the people who buy them to become more familiar with all of the ins and outs of computers. You know, so for instance, with the L Braille, which is a Windows machine, I can run most any program that's accessible in Windows on the L Braille, but it also means that I have to know more about Windows. I have to understand more about the programs I'm getting into, and I have to have a little bit of ability to back myself out of corners if that's you know where I end up. I suspect the same thing is somewhat true with the Polaris, but maybe I'll let you, John, you and Susan and Kate can kind of toss that around a little bit and tell us what you know.
Well, I think, I think a lot of people are really interested in the new note takers, the Polaris from HIMSS, the Braille Note Touch from Humanware, and Steve mentioned the L Braille, which is a computer, a Windows computer that runs JAWS and has a 14-cell or 40-cell focus Braille display with a Braille keyboard. One of the things that I think has probably been difficult for certainly HIMSS and Humanware is that both of these companies had very successful note takers in the past. With HIMSS, it was the U2. And with Humanware, it was the Braille Note Apex. And when they designed these new note takers, the Polaris and the Braille Note Touch, as Steve said, they had to go to updated operating systems, and so they're now using the Android operating system, at least these two note takers are, and they previously had been using Windows CE. And what that meant, in non-technical terms, is that in addition to designing brand new hardware, these internal circuitry and casing and all that kind of stuff, they also had to write new software that allows the note taker to use the Android operating system. And what that means is that the companies basically had to recreate a lot of the features and familiarity that we all have had in the past and have come to love. They had to recreate that using a new operating system under the hood for it to run on. And I think one of the biggest challenges for both of these companies has been to come out with a brand new note taker that has most of the familiar programs and functionality that we're used to, and plus provides additional new features. And I know, speaking from my experience with the Polaris, the basic functionality that we had in the BrailleSense U2 is there. The file manager, the calculator, the word processor and web browser all work basically the same as they did on the BrailleSense U2. However, there are some features that aren't in the Polaris that were in the U2, and we hope that they will be coming to the Polaris at some point. One of the features that I really miss is macros. We don't have macros in the Polaris. We don't have a database manager. We don't have the Google search tool that we had before, and we also don't have the YouTube tool that we had before. And in some ways, this is kind of a double-edged sword because, yes, you can do Google searches with the web browser, and you can also play YouTube videos with the YouTube app under Android, which you can go and install, and that does work. But unfortunately, the experience just isn't as convenient or efficient, in my opinion, as it was with the built-in apps that the U2 had when these apps were designed from the ground up for a blind user using a Braille machine. And so I think, and I know that HumanWare has had some similar issues with the Braille Note Touch. There was some functionality that the Apex had built in that in order to get that same functionality with the Braille Note Touch, you have to install Android apps. And these apps, you know, currently are not as user-friendly and efficient as the built-in apps were. So that's a long answer to Steve's question, but I think the bottom line is that, you know, we have a ways to go to regain some of the efficiency that we had with the older note takers. Would others agree with that?
Yeah, I would. Yes.
See, part of the dilemma for any company is the more stuff that you can rely on the operating system to do or rely on other software to do, the less money you have to spend paying programmers to write fancy code for you. But the problem with it is that the programs that are written for the wider world are pretty much visual in nature. Take YouTube, for instance. When you log into YouTube in your favorite web browser, you get a whole bunch of stuff on the page. Part of what you get is the YouTube player. You get all kinds of comments. You get next and previous buttons and some other frames and links and stuff up at the top of the page. And so for a blind person, you got to plow through all that stuff and figure out where things are that you need. The YouTube app that that Hymns wrote for the U2, which is, I wish they had used a different name because it's kind of it's kind of confusing to say both of those things in the same sentence. But the app that they did, you'd search for something and it would present you with this nice menu of results. And you'd pick the one you want, and the minute you did, it would start playing. And, you know, of course, from our point of view, that's wonderful. But
yeah, and the other thing that was really nice, that is really nice about the YouTube app, is that it also allows you to download that content. So if you find a really neat song or a video tutorial on something, and you say, "Gosh, I'd really like to keep that so that I can refer to it," there's a download button, and you can just download it, and you also aren't listening to any advertisements or anything like that. It's just purely the content.
Now, one of the things, this is Susan, and one of the things that happened as YouTube would periodically make some change, and we'd load up the YouTube app that's on the U2, this is fun, and it wouldn't always work, and they'd have to, it would break, and they'd have to fix it, and that would take time, and so that's one of the disadvantages of having their own, is that they had to keep writing code to keep that moving.
Yeah.
So
that was one of the
problems, and you're absolutely right, with the Android YouTube, you do tab around the screen a lot as the way you would on a computer, and you can skip ad. There's a button for that, but you have to go through all that, and it's definitely not as convenient. I've never had it refuse to play something, however. It just takes longer.
Right. And again, that's because the website is designed for people using a screen, a visual screen. And, you know, they're buzzing around with the mouse and clicking on this and zipping over to that and zapping on something else. And, you know, it's all wonderful. But when you've got a 20 or a 32 cell display and you don't have a screen in front of you, because that's the thing about a note taker, you know, you really don't have a screen, even though Hymns note takers have a little display area that the teacher can look at. But from the point of view of the person using the note taker, there's no screen. So everything has to be done in one way or the other through the keyboard. And Windows is, and Android too, is kind of a graphical universe. So, you know, the advantage that the note taker tries to capture for you gets harder to do the minute you start relying on the basic operating system to do your work for you, and you don't have the special code that the earlier note takers had. But the hope of the companies is that it will cost them less to produce these things. Now, is that actually true? I have a feeling not yet, because I think what they found out is that they were able to get certain things to work, and certain things they said, "Oh my God, we've really got to go back and write specialized code whether we like it or not." So it's been a mixed blessing for everybody. And of course for us, the users, it's been, things are not quite as simple as they were back in the old days when you got your note taker and whatever features you had were the ones you got, and you didn't get to pick and choose what you could do. And it's, you know, kind of a axiomatic statement in when it comes to computers, that the more power you have, the more complicated things get. So, you know, that's the balancing act that we do when we start thinking about the new note takers. Yeah, we can do lots, but we're going to have to learn more.
And the other side of the coin is that there are things, Susan and I are most familiar with the Hymns products, although we've had some experience with the older Humanware, Empower and Apex note takers. But there are some things that can be done on the Polaris that we couldn't do with the previous note takers. For example, we have access to Google Docs and Google Drive, Facebook Messenger, a number of Android apps can be installed that do work reasonably well. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I will credit Hymns for is they have produced a list, which they are going to continue to update, of Android apps that they have tested on the Polaris that you can download and install. And these apps that are on their list, they say, all work reasonably well. And the reason I say they say is because Susan and I have not had a chance to try even a tenth of them. I mean, there are a couple hundred apps on this list.
Right.
And some of them, I'm sure, will work a little better than others. They're, you know, none of them are going to be 100% perfect, probably. But the fact that we do have access to the Play Store and can go and download these apps and have access to features and functionality that we never had in the past is really pretty neat.
Have you tried any of the apps, Kate, for the Braille Note Touch?
I have. I've done the... I've done some of them. I've read books using the Read to Go, I think it is, and then, but again, it's not as seamless, at least I don't, you can download books really quickly from either Bard or Bookshare. The download is really quick. The Braille Note didn't have the Bookshare API the way the U2 did.
You mean the Polaris?
Does the Polaris have the? Does that have the Bookshare API, or do you go to Read to Go or
well,
go
the,
read?
The Polaris allows you to use. I believe it's Go Read for Android.
Yeah.
It allows you to use that, but no, it does not. It does not have the built-in Bookshare app that they created for the U2.
Yeah, because that was really quick on the U2, much quicker than on the Apex. But the download using the app, the Android app, is very quick. So that's a plus. I don't know. I just there are some things that I don't think I'll ever get used to. Like you can't copy text from the internet, which I guess you can on the Polaris, right? Can you
Yes, you can.
Yeah, you cannot do that on the Braille Note Touch.
Yeah.
And you of course can do it on the Apex. And that I would really miss.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, the other thing that you can't currently do on the Braille Note Touch is you can't copy text out of an email message and go paste it into a document somewhere.
Yeah, which you can
do
too. Yeah.
And so that's I know a Humanware dealer that is really pushing them as hard as he can because he has a customer who used an Apex for the last several years to run her business, mm-hmm. and apparently she receives a lot of orders via email.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And she needs to have the ability to, you know, to pull information out of the email message and go work with it in the word processor.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And the Braille Note Touch currently won't let you do that.
No,
That's a standard thing that we know that we can even do on our computers. I mean, you got a desktop, you got a laptop, you can always do that.
Do you feel that the Braille Note Touch was maybe released too soon before it was ready for showtime? I'm really getting that. And, you know, when it first came out and it was demonstrated to me, I really wasn't impressed, and I'm still not impressed with it.
I kind of feel that they were trying to get the jump on HIMSS because they knew that the Polaris was about to be released, and I think they were hoping that they could come out with something first, but I kind of felt that it wasn't ready for prime time. And after a year of waiting, I'm still not sure it's ready for prime time.
I'm not either. I am not impressed. I mean, every time I read about updates and I look at it, I just cannot warm up to it. I was hoping that I could because I was thinking it would be lesser of a learning curve to switch from Apex when eventually I'll have to switch to something, and I'm not looking forward to that day.
And I think
you can't rely on the familiarity with the Apex to seamlessly transition to the Braille Note Touch. You'd be frustrated if you did because there are enough differences that warrant really learning it. On the other hand, I haven't actually looked at it, I'm embarrassed to say, but there is a user guide, of course. Humanware, I think, has always been really good about providing good help.
Yes.
there's also an online wizard. You can go to this wizard thing where you can learn it. I think there are like 11 different lessons, and that's obviously a huge plus. You can do Google Docs, which I haven't done, but want to. And, one thing to just name two practical things that I think are a big difference between the two. The Polaris is much lighter to carry around than the Braille Note Touch.
Physically, you'd say.
Yeah. And on the other hand, the Touch does have the screen that, you know, the touch screen, which some of my students really love and are very good at. So that obviously makes it somewhat heavier. One of the practical things that I don't like about the Polaris versus the Braille Note Touch is the AC connector, because in the Polaris it's on the back, right? And you can put the AC adapter through the back of the case, which is great as long as you're not using it. But my experience with students is that they often will forget that it's there. They flip up the case, and then, you know, you're
They break it off?
Exactly, or it can damage the port.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I wish they could change. Whereas the Braille Note Touch, the AC port is a micro USB on the left side. So those are two very practical things that I think should be given some consideration when you're thinking about it, which to have.
The Polaris Mini has the connector on the right-hand side now rather than on the back.
Okay. Do you know, Steve and I were talking about this earlier, do you know the price for the Polaris Mini?
I believe it's $41.95.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah,
and is that an 18-cell display?
It's a 20-cell.
Oh, 20. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. HIMSS, I think, went 20 and 32. And they've never, I don't think they ever will come out with a 40-cell machine.
Mm-hmm.
And a Polaris Mini, that just means it has the fewer cells, or is there another Mini about it?
It has fewer cells. Instead of the 32, it has 20, and it doesn't have on the standard Polaris. You can put an SD card in the side. On the Mini, you can't do that. You have to either connect with cable, or there's a way under the battery, I think, that you can put a mini card.
On the Polaris Mini, you can use a micro SD card.
And it goes into
the battery compartment, which, you know, there are pros and cons. The good news is you'll never lose your card because it can't pop out of the machine in any way.
Yeah.
The disadvantage is that it requires a little bit more effort if you want to change cards, because you have to pop the unit out of the case and take the battery out and change the card, and it's about a 20-second procedure. I mean, it doesn't take very long, but it's just not as convenient. The Mini, just to answer your question, Suzanne, the Mini is physically a lot smaller, and it's lighter than the than the 32 cell. So it's a much smaller unit.
Uh-huh.
Of course, with the SD cards, I mean, with the micro SD cards, you can get some pretty big micro SDs, can't you? I mean, I know you can get 32 gig, but can you get bigger than that?
I believe I've seen 128, and I've heard that there are 256 gigabyte.
So
I haven't actually had my hands on one, but
you can
large cards.
Just get one of those cards, a fairly big one, put it in there, and leave it there,
mm-hmm.
and regard it as just additional storage space, and I think that's what I would probably do, and that's what I kind of do anyway. I mean, I have, even in my U2, which is the regular size one, I've got an SD card that just lives in the U2. I mean,
I do the same thing. With
stays there all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't even have that big a one. I think I've got a 32 gig. No, I may. It may not even be a 32 gig. I may even be a 16. I'm not sure, but for the way I use it, I've just never needed a bigger card, and I don't feel the need to change it, but it's there in case. And where I use it is if somebody gives me something and I want to save it, you know, and move it to somewhere else, if I'm not using Dropbox, I'll put it on the SD card and then take the SD card and, you know.
A couple of other differences between the Mini and the larger Polaris is the larger Polaris has two stereo speakers. I mean, it records in stereo. It's got very nice media sound. I'm super impressed. The speaker on the Mini is on the bottom of the unit. So if it's in your lap, it's kind of muffled. But if you put it on a desk, there's enough elevation from the case that it sounds like it's on top, and it works pretty well. The Mini also doesn't have the ability for, there's no display where a teacher could read along with what a student is doing.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
would be another difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did they handle that on the Braille Note Touch, Kate? Did they have a little screen that the sighted teacher can use? Oh,
yeah, okay. There is a touch screen on it.
And the touch screen shows is also a display.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Kate, just to you mentioned Google Docs and Drive. I had a very interesting experience with that this summer. Slate Roof Press, the poetry collaborative that I belong to, runs an annual writing contest, and one of our members placed all of our submitted manuscripts this year on a Google Drive.
Right.
And she sent me a link to the drive, and I couldn't get the darn thing to access. But as soon as she sent me access, like the direct drive, and made it part of my drives, I went in and got every single manuscript, and it worked out great. PDF, docs, the whole thing.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was neat to be able to do that. I haven't tried creating my own Google Docs yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I could say that I've tried the touch with that, but I haven't. But I've heard good things about it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And those are the things that we look for in the newer note takers, of being able to just do mainstream stuff.
Right.
I mean, I love the fact that I can. I have a music system in the house that I can control from my L Braille if I want to, because it's a Windows machine and it runs a Windows program. If I can't do that from any other note taker that I've ever had, because you know you just don't get the option of using mainstream programs. On the other hand, I have had other mainstream programs where I've gotten bitten. Because due to the nature of the way Braille keys work on a note taker, I couldn't use the controls. And I kind of found that out by installing the program and going, that's not going to work. and they don't always tell you that. I mean, if you ask a sales rep from HIMSS or from Freedom Scientific or from Humanware, you know, can you run any program? They're going to pretty much say, "Oh yeah, just go to the store, get the one you want, and run it, and you'll be fine." And they're sort of right, but not quite. It's
so you
really got to be careful.
On the Braille, on the Polaris, can you use like UEB when you're using the calculator? I'm just looking at some of the things the Braille Note Touch can do.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Because you have to write, in, at least unless it's changed in the last month, and I didn't realize it, you have to write in computer Braille when you use the calculator.
No, I believe in the calculator, you have the ability to set the Braille code that you're going to be using while in the calculator, and I'm quite sure that UEB is a choice.
Well,
does that carry over to other things that you're doing, or is it strictly for the calculator and then it goes back to being whatever?
Oh, no, it carries over to other things.
Okay.
So
it carries
example,
over when you're writing on the web, doing searches. I'm in UEB 99% of the time. Sometimes I forget that I'm there. I can write my file names that way and everything.
How does that work for you? Because one of the problems that I've run into with the L Braille is that it's supposed to be smart enough to tell me when it wants me in computer Braille. And sometimes it does, and sometimes it says for me to write in computer Braille, and when I do, I get garbage. And,
I can't think of a situation that I can draw on to answer that. It's a very good question.
Well, I find that I'm not a. I will admit that I am not. I have not converted over to UEB yet. So I'm using EBAE or standard US Braille.
Uh-huh,
and what I find is that if I'm on, let's say, if I'm using the web browser and I am on a login page, and I go to the edit boxes to log in, it will tell me when I need to use computer Braille. And at that point, I can just go ahead and type computer Braille on the keyboard, even though I have the Braille grade set to contracted. I don't have to change the machine to go to computer Braille. When it tells me to enter computer Braille, it somehow has made the decision, it knows internally that whatever I key in, it needs to recognize that computer Braille in that field, and it works just fine.
Yeah, see, the L Braille is supposed to do that, but sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And what I ran into that situation yesterday. I was trying to help somebody set up one of their Echo devices, and I got nailed a couple of times because I tried to type something, and I thought I was supposed to be in computer Braille, and I wasn't. And finally, I just got frustrated enough to just say, all right, I'm putting it in computer Braille, and this is what I'm going to use, and that way I don't ever have to worry about it. And so in with the L Braille, that has been a less than stellar experience. And I'm glad to hear that it's not the case on the Polaris, because now that doesn't mean the Polaris doesn't have other problems that are a little bit strange, right, Susan?
Yeah, there are some issues with the word processor that are a little crazy making. And, you know, hopefully that's going to be remedied pretty soon. For a while, well, we don't need to go into them all now. We'll just say that there were some issues that had to do with line breaks, that had to do with setting your font for typing, your pitch size, knowing that it would save page breaks, and just getting all of that so that when a document prints out or when someone else sees it on their screen, that it's emerging correctly. Kate, can you speak to any of that, any of the word processing issues on the
I haven't
touch
had trouble
or the
with
Polaris?
Yeah, I haven't had word processing issues on it at all.
On which?
On the Braille Note Touch.
On the Touch.
I know that I haven't used the Polaris enough to know, but I know of a student who told me that he's had issues with it.
Okay.
Student, interestingly, likes the Braille Note Touch better than the
Polaris.
Which, but I haven't had them long enough. I just started having them this summer, and only but it's something I plan to get into with him in the fall, because I'm very curious as to why he says that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Did they come up with a way finally to deal with BRL and BRF files on the touch? Because I know that was a big thorn in everybody's side when it first came out, but
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And HumanWare at the time basically said, you know, if you're going to do anything, just do it in Word.
Yeah.
And treat it as a print file. Which,
yeah, and that's primarily what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the way I am, because I never got used to the idea that I could write in contracted Braille anywhere, and
I do use contracted Braille, but I
I mean, if you want to create a BRF file,
I see what you mean.
You can't. I don't think you can do that in the word processor. You have to. What do you have to do?
Wait a second.
Didn't they have a utility that was meant for that?
They came out with a utility to deal with that. I can't remember KeyBRF or KeyBRL or something.
KeyBRF app.
And that was their solution. But in talking with a couple of people locally here, apparently it's not the be-all end-all for what you know, for what everybody wants. One thing I will say that I find to be very disappointing with both companies is, I'll mention the Hims one first and then I'll mention the Humanware one. Hims has not yet, although they claim they will, and I really hope they do, Hims has not yet created a way to transfer email, saved email that people had in their BrailleSense U2s into the Polaris. The Polaris uses some different formatting conventions and stuff, and ultimately we're really hoping that Hims will write a utility, a conversion utility, that will allow a person to take all of the saved email that they have sorted into folders on their U2 and transfer that email into their Polaris so that they will have full access to it. What Humanware did, which I think is even more unconscionable, is they didn't provide a way for people to transfer their documents that were in Keyword and KeyBraille into the BrailleNote Touch. So if you have an Apex full of documents that you've created, the only way that you can deal with those, as I understand it, is to actually convert them in the Apex to a different format like doc or something or TXT possibly. I'm not sure which all formats are supported. You convert those documents in the Apex before you send them over to the BrailleNote Touch. And my understanding in talking with a couple of local people here that we know who use the Apex and now have the BrailleNote Touch is that it's a very tedious process, but more importantly, a lot of the formatting is lost when those documents are converted to these other formats that the BrailleNote Touch can work with. And to me, that's just unconscionable that a company would not create a utility to perform that conversion for people. Their tech support folks must be getting driven nuts by customers who are calling with Apexes full of files, wanting to know how to get them into the BrailleNote Touch.
Well, and part of what made that unconscionable was the fact that they were offering a nice trade-in, that you could take your old Apex and trade it in toward the toward the price of a BrailleNote Touch. Well, if
that's
you traded,
right, so you save.
You save all
your files onto an SD card.
Yeah.
You send your Apex in to trade it in for this nice program. You get your brand new machine, and you've got a card full of files that you can't use.
That you can't use, yeah.
Well, I just got a document a few weeks ago describing how to do it. I did it a few years ago, and it didn't take as long as I thought it would to do it. But having said that, I haven't had enough experience with using files over the long term to talk about the format issues. I know, to get back to your original email point, that you can't. One thing that I do all the time, whether it's in Outlook or on the Apex, is to create folders for emails to go into, and you can't do that on the Touch.
Interesting.
Mm. You can't
create
folders.
That's right. The Touch doesn't currently support email folders. That's right. Other than the ones that it comes with.
And the Polaris, you can. You can create them on the Polaris.
Oh, okay. The other thing that you can do is if you create them elsewhere, like on your phone or whatever, and it syncs, it'll sync them to your BrailleNote Touch. So
but
if you're created somewhere else, then it'll work.
But that's only if
directly.
You're using IMAP, right? I mean,
yes.
that won't work for
yep.
POP3.
Yeah.
I want to, Suzanne, you've been sitting pretty quietly through this welter of probably what to you must be kind of like a little bit of geekiness as we all play with the nuts and bolts. And I'm wondering, you know, what are you getting out of all of this tonight? And you too, John.
Besides the headache?
Well,
correct answer.
Correct.
I'm getting the sense that you have to be pretty careful about deciding which one to get if you want to get one.
Yes.
And some of these things that you seem to not be able to do are pretty surprising to me. I mean, I use computer. I haven't done anything with note takers. I tried at Braille and Speak way back when, and just never got to be able to sync things and learn it. And I was trying to learn Windows at the same time, and I went with the computer.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly where it would serve me well. And my Braille is okay, but I've never done UEB, so that's like I'd have to learn all that. So I'm kind of like, this probably isn't for me right now. But
and that's I think a very important part of this that people tend to forget it. For as long as note takers have been out, I have always told people use them if you want to, but for anything that you're going to present to the real world out there, which is, everybody but those of us who can't see, you better work on it on a computer, because if you want your formatting to be right and you want fonts and everything to be as good as they can be, you're going to have to use a real word processor, and you just can't rely on the note takers.
Now, that said, and this is going to make me seem as dumb as pudding, I did write my textbook on a U2. And I did send those files through email to my publisher, and they did the galleys and everything from that. But I don't know how wise that was, and they probably hid a bunch of things from me and said, "What is wrong with this woman, and how can we tell her?"
I think as an adult, we can get away with that because we're working with people that, kind of are willing to give us that break. But I wonder, say, for a student who is in college and the professor is grading on things like, I don't like the fact that you used, 11-point Helvetica as opposed to, 12-point Times New Roman, and you thought you were doing this great job, and then you discover that the things that were supposed to be centered maybe aren't, and
yep.
What was supposed to be in heading one style is not. And there's a lot of stuff like that that in school you may not be. Now I realize that a lot of kids have, people in the disability offices that are willing to do all of their formatting for them and all that kind of stuff. But I also could see myself thinking I had done a good job of formatting something and finding out later on that I got all kinds of points taken off because there were things that I thought were happening and they just weren't.
And that's where I am.
Well, it sounds like me, yeah. Even now with a computer, that I'll think I've done something, and somebody says, "Why is that in bold?" And I say, "It shouldn't be."
Maybe we're all showing our age here a little bit. But I have to honestly say that when I was growing up as a kid in the 60s and through the mid 70s at school, we were using typewriters at the time, and.
Yes.
other than understanding paragraphs, I can't honestly say that I really knew what, bolding and underlining and a lot of those
things. Nobody did. You're right.
What they were, how they were used and when you would use them and that sort of thing. And all I can say is I really hope that a lot of the blind kids today are learning about those things because it's important in order to produce professional documents to have a handle on what those, what those attributes are and when you use them.
It may be important enough to incorporate into the more advanced Braille challenge test. That's what I think.
That was part of what sparked the whole UEB movement.
I know. And I think that's right. More than ever now, I think even as adults at our age now, we have to come to terms with how everything looks because it matters.
Yeah.
It does.
It's a shame because
it's certainly I can remember the time that I typed a 60-page Spanish project paper on the typewriter only to find out it was on stencil. And it had
oh, God.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And we've all done that.
Yeah. Or the ribbon goes completely out and you don't know it.
You don't know.
Yeah.
It's the great thing about these new reading apps, because you can check things so quickly. You know what I mean? Like when I take something out of the printer now, I automatically just
go to
Microsoft AI and make sure that it's printed.
Yeah.
And I can tell if it's the test printer page, if the printer has gone awry, and I've done reset. I'll know whether the first page is actually the test page, and I don't have to include it with a form that I'm sending home to a parent. I mean, those
that's
things
really good.
Are like just life changers.
Yes.
Does the Polaris has the KNFB reader, right? Can you get that?
You can get the app,
And there's a camera on the back, on the underside?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the camera on the Mini has a little better placement, too.
Ah, okay.
Oh, so you could have the camera read to you or put it in Braille or...
If you've got the KNFB app, it'll scan.
Oh, I see that. Okay. So it'll read out loud, or it'll put it in Braille.
Both.
It'll do both. It'll do both.
Whatever you have it set for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if you've already purchased KNFB Reader for your iDevice and you have it, can you transfer it to Polaris?
That's
I
a good question.
I think you could.
I would hope you could.
But
then you put a big expenditure. I know I spent a lot of... I got it, even though I got it on sale, it was like $74.
Well, I paid $100 for it. And, one thing that I really like, to get back to your word processing question or issue or whatever you want to call it, is that I think... You know, creating, saving, editing, it's very similar in some ways to Windows. Like you have to, you don't just go to the main menu. I mean, in some ways, it makes it more difficult to really mess up and not save a document. Because you really can't.
Are you talking about the touch?
I'm talking about the touch now.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
No, I just wanted to know.
So I think that's a plus to, I know I'm jumping back to the whole word processor discussion we were into a while ago, but but to, Carla, I really think that you probably could download it again, because I know, like, there were a few times when my KNFB reader app stopped working on my phone, and of course I just downloaded it again. So I think as long as you're signed in under your same...
Well, that's got to be a license kind of a thing, where they issue you a license when you bought the product, and I would suspect that on any platform that you install it, one of the first things you have to do is key in the key, type in the key. And as long as you've got the right key, you're golden. If you don't, of course, then all bets are off. But and you can probably even go to NFB and say, I lost my key. Can you give me one somewhere? I hope. Well,
I have another question that I don't know if this is the time for or not, but it's something that I really don't understand. And that is, theoretically, when I've been exploring these note takers and these hybrids and everything, I've been told to avoid certain ones, and I don't understand why they're not catching up. You would think, for example, that... the L Braille, since it is Windows and it runs JAWS, which I do, that the learning curve would be less, but I've been told, I think, Steve, you told me it was more, and I've also, another thing that I don't understand is what happened with the B2G, because theoretically that sounds like, it's running Android, and why didn't it become powerful, and why didn't it keep up?
Let me take those questions one at a time. I'll deal with the first one, because the reason that the learning curve is so steep, Carla, is that you remember that all of the keystrokes that make JAWS work and Windows work were originally designed on a typewriter keyboard.
Right.
And you only have 9 keys on the L Braille. In other words, you've got the 6 dots Actually, you got the 8 dots in the space bar. So you have to come up with combinations of keys that are going to do all of the keystrokes that you can think of. Control, Alt, Shift, the JAWS key itself, and combinations of those. You know, so the trick is to come up with a system that allows you to hit all of those keys from a Braille keyboard and get everything to work. And that's why the learning curve is so steep.
If you
took an L Braille and you just plugged in a regular USB keyboard, it would just look like your desktop computer, and you could sit there and play with it all day. But mm-hmm. you'd kind of be defeating the purpose, because then you have to lug around this other keyboard with you.
Right.
Now, the second question about the B2G. The B2G is probably the poster picture of a machine that was not ready for prime time when it was released. And that's why it's never caught on, because it was just so completely lacking in just about everything. I mean, even the basics like the user guide weren't even working properly. And let's say the very short version is that it just really, it took too long to come out, and other things surpassed it, I think is the best way to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are rapidly approaching 9 o'clock, folks, and I don't have any objection to staying on if anybody wants to kick stuff around, but on the other hand, I did kind of promise that we would try to make it an hour, so if anybody feels like they've had enough or they need to go do something else, I am certainly not going to be at all insulted.
I don't know how to say this diplomatically. The dog really does have to go out.
You know, John, an hour ago...
Okay. Try that on your friend.
Like an hour ago, I would have believed you, John, but now I'm not so sure.
Well, I find this very interesting. Not that I'm getting into note takers immediately, but I really like to learn, and John and Steve and Susan and Carla, all of you explain things very well. So
I was going to say the same thing. This is real informative for me, starting with zero knowledge.
I'm glad. I mean, that's kind of the reason we run them, and, you know, hopefully.
Good.
Yeah.
And I'm glad John joined us. That was really helpful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun, and I'll do my best to join in the future. I've really enjoyed this, too.
Great. Good.